Welcome to this episode of Masonic Life 360, an open and ongoing discussion of topics from a Mason's personal point of view. This is being brought to you by the Masonic Life Initiative. For more information, please visit division8masons.com. We are here with the MLI discussion group meeting, and we're going to talk a little bit about why it is technically forbidden to introduce or to talk religion and politics in a Masonic lodge. Gentlemen, why is that? Okay, the last time we had a discussion on are we a religion or not a religion? So obviously, if we had a discussion about whether we're a religion or not a religion, weren't we discussing religion? So if we were discussing religion, how does that not violate our quote-unquote directive not to discuss religion?
I think that the issue here is that we are not a religion so that we can remain neutral in our discussions with each other instead of it polarizing the way, you know, some religions can end up polarizing people. And that's probably the whole bottom line. That's probably why we are not permitted, if you will, to discuss religions in lodge so that we don't polarize ourselves.
Although here's an interesting question, and we've ran into this in a couple of the lodges that I've sat in an officer position, is what you have different religions. If a person of the Jewish faith comes in and wants to take his oaths and obligations on the Torah, if a Hindi comes in and wants to take his oaths and obligations on the Veda, we have obviously just had a discussion of religion.
But that's the point there, is that everybody can take their oath, and that's within their own mind of who they're giving that oath to or who they're basing their oath on. And, you know, their feelings about all that. But that's not a discussion within the lodge of saying whether they think mine's better than yours or any of that sort of stuff.
Okay, now he just brought up a good point. Now you're saying at what level is the discussion carried on? Not that you can't have the discussion. Where is the ethical break point?
Where do you draw the line?
Yeah. Well, we base it on a belief in a supreme being, not the definition of a supreme being. Each religion has its own book, and they read from that book. That kind of sets their belief in who that supreme being is and what that supreme being really tries to convey to those people. So if you take an oath and you make you swear on your book of faith, it needs to be your book of faith, not somebody else's book of faith. Otherwise, the obligation is not binding upon you.
Yeah, exactly. But how did they even have that discussion in the first place if there's a prohibition against having the discussion?
Was it based on the initiatic process? In other words, discuss more on that level. How do we make the initiatic process personal to each individual?
So now you're making the distinction of you're not discussing the religion per se. You're discussing the personal aspect of how an individual is interacting with his religion instead of discussing what is this religion about? What does this religion teach you? And heaven forbid this is good and this is bad. Those are the discussions then that are more prohibited.
There's your pro-polarizing issue. No one's trying to force whether mine's better or yours is better, or this one's right, this one's wrong.
Well, then what do you think about having discussions of the similarities? Oh, I see that whenever you're using the Torah, I see that when you're using the Vedas, that they are all saying this similar thing. Can you have those discussions?
I question the discussions on religion in a lodge room, period.
Yeah.
Because we say we cannot discuss religion or politics in a Masonic lodge, but is it within the lodge or is it during a tiled Lodge meeting.
Well, now, for people, what do you mean by that?
Within our ritual, when we begin a lodge meeting.
A formal meeting.
Formal meeting, thank you.
Okay.
During a formal meeting, there is no discussion of religion or politics. This discussion about religion, and we haven't spoken of politics yet, normally occurs outside of a formal meeting.
So what you're saying is the big prohibition is during a meeting, the floor cannot be taken up by, oh, do you know what I heard the Secretary of State say today?
Correct.
That becomes the verboten part.
Correct.
Because a formal meeting has two purposes. It's either going to be a business meeting where we take care of our business, or it's going to be a degree. Correct. And there are protocols for the degrees which do not include any discussions of those types.
Correct.
And during a business meeting, it is strictly business.
We've had discussions outside of the lodge room, during dinners, during social time, but as soon as we get into a formal meeting, there are no discussions. The protocol for our meetings doesn't lend itself for discussion. Now, could it happen during a business meeting? It could. You know, could those topics come to the fore?
Well, once you get into this, there's a time and a place for everything.
Well, and then wouldn't it be the duty of whoever's running the meeting then to just gavel it down and say that is inappropriate for the forum that we're in?
This is not what we're for.
Well, then that brings up an interesting dichotomy that it's like when people think, and this is, you know, we're having a discussion here for people that aren't necessarily Masons, when people think Masons can't discuss this, then what we're coming to a consensus of is that's a misnomer. Yeah. We can discuss these things in certain settings.
When it's appropriate.
I think it's more one of those things of why invite the problem?
Yeah, and so, well, you don't want discord and harmony is what it sounds
exactly.
like.
We're
back
when we're in a tiled meeting or whatnot, the point is there's an objective at every meeting. So why invite a problem inside that meeting at the time? So whether it be politics or religion, I mean.
And they're the two most polarizing subjects that you can come up with.
Yeah, you can't really, I mean, you think about it, I mean, it's one of those things that will literally divide.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see it time and time again, dividing groups, and you know, you see it in modern day politics now and stuff like that. And, and so I think it's not inviting that problem. And I will say this, I think outside of the lodge too, I think we generally try not to speak much of the contrasts of religion as much as maybe about religion, but just for that same reason too, is because, you know, no one wants to start a fight with a
it seems like what you're saying is that, you know, the religion and the politics, well, it's kind of like what I was told before I got married, you know, 40, 50 years ago, was that, you know, be sure that before you get married, you agree on religion, kids, and money. You know, it's like those are the three things that you better have a good solid basis on. And so what it sounds like to become a Mason, you know, you better agree that politics and religion are something that you let each individual have their opinion on, but don't try and get into the I'm going to influence you on what your religion and what your politics are. Well, you have the freedom.
Don't use the lodge as your soapbox for those two subjects.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's one place. What's comforting is the fact that within a lodge, with at least in a formal setting, it's one place where we are all equals. You know, we all respect Freemasonry. We respect the tenets of friendship and brotherly love. And that is what brings us together, because we don't have to think about, or we put all of our personal biases aside for the good of the order and for the good of friendship, brotherly love.
And I think the purpose of the fraternity is not to be political and not to select religion. the purpose of eternity is to make men better. And you don't do that through politics or religion.
Brotherly love, relief, and truth.
Little side subject there, though, but at the same time, isn't it interesting how much Freemasonry has actually influenced politics over the course of our country?
It is.
Yeah. For us not being really involved in it, it's gotten, it has made a huge impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you have impacted in the sense of trying to maintain that civility, mm-hmm. instead of allowing a country or whatever the case may be to divide itself more, we tend to look for more of the common traits that should be bringing us together and not dividing us.
In my mind, kind of a moral high ground.
An empathy of sorts in some aspects too. I see, you see a lot more, I would say, in Masonry or whatnot, is a more empathetic approach people take. And I think that also applies to some of this because I think everyone sort of has that opinion, like, okay, hey, your political views and your religious views are yours and your own or whatnot, but we can sort of relate to the individual of how they may feel about those views or whatnot, and not really get into as much of an argument about it. Have that respect for it.
Then what you're going back to is more like what I was saying is, the discussions with individuals of, whenever you see this or I see the similarity, I understand a certain common ground.
Yeah.
And makes it relatable to the new brothers coming in rather than trying to go, how stupid can you be that you believe that?
But those in history, if you look back on history, those men did not promote themselves or their ideas or ideals under the guise of Freemasonry. They did it because of who they are and their own personal ideas and ideals, which are influenced by the tenets of Freemasonry.
Well, now that brings up a really interesting point, because then that goes back to what you've been saying
about the initiatic process. In other words, we're teaching lessons of tolerance, patience. That's why I can be of one faith and come and watch somebody else of another faith, mm-hmm. because once we go through that doors, we're on a whole different level.
That's why some presidents can even walk into a lodge and they're not treated as if they were the president. They're another brother.
Well, exactly. I've had this discussion. I've been in the Palm Springs Lodge with a past president of the United States. And guess what? Mm-hmm. He sits in the same chair we sit in. He wears the same apron we wear. Mm-hmm. There's no difference in his status in the lodge. And actually, you bring up a good point about that the men that are leaders aren't leaders through acting under the guise of Freemasonry. They are leaders because of the lessons that we learn in Freemasonry, mm-hmm. and your ability to be a leader is enhanced because of that.
Freemasonry gives them the tool to carve the trail to where they want to go. They can pick their own trail. And that's what some do better than others, perhaps, but it's still.
So I got a question. While you were sitting next to the president in Palm Springs Lodge, where was the Secret Service?
They're in there, but they had to be Masons. he brings a detail in, but those guys are just more Masons. The way the structure of our fraternity is, you can't bring in just anybody. Those guys are part of the fraternity also. And, their job to be that they are a Secret Service guy. And one of my neighbors will work Camp David.
One of my roommates, and when I moved to California, became a Secret Service guy. And he actually was with President Ford. My wife and I met him, and I'm sure, and Jim was not a Mason, is not a Mason, but I'm sure he was standing right outside the door, talking with Nick, Tyler.
Yeah.
The Tyler held the sword, and then he held the other instrument.
The Uzi.
That's true. They all had Uzis at that time. Mm-hmm.
But I think, as has been said, you know, the decisions, we don't work under the guise of Freemasonry. We don't espouse ourselves as making decisions under the guise of Freemasonry. We espouse our own ideas and ideals as ourselves, but with the teachings of Freemasonry, you know, brotherly love, relief, and truth. That's who we are.
Now, I think it's interesting that many of these famous men are attracted to those teachings. Mm-hmm. The reason they joined Masonry was because they were attracted to that kind of teaching.
Yeah, it's a chicken or the egg thing too. Which one made him which?
That's an interesting question.
Was it Masonry that made him do all the other things, or the other things that said, geez, you know, Masonry fits right into what I love?
Yeah. And so actually, yeah, that
could
that,
be either one.
Well, and also we almost answer that question because we always ask of anybody coming in, where were you first made a Mason?
Uh-huh.
And the answer is not in a lodge or, no, you know,
there's not in a closet.
It's not in a closet.
Right. And the diversity of personal ideals and ideas amongst some of those very famous people, from whether they had conservative leanings, liberal leanings, or middle-of-the-road leanings in their own personal lives, it, as you pointed out with the president, we all come together, we all sit in the same seats, we all utter the same script, you know,
And it's also interesting to me how much of our language is based on the Masonic rituals and the initiatory processes, because what you're just describing, we always say we meet on the level.
Mm-hmm.
Is it on the level? Well, yeah, whenever you set
in,
it literally is on the same level. Nobody's mm-hmm. raised above one another.
Right.
Whenever we set there, all of these men, no matter what capacity in life they serve,
mm-hmm.
they still are all meeting, quote, on the level.
Right.
They meet as peers,
mm-hmm. yes.
Peers, the foundation of that being peers is the ritual and the teaching and the underlying thing that we get out of Masonry, not my religion, my politics then.
Mm-hmm. You know what makes it interesting when you think about it? This year we celebrated 300 years of organized Freemasonry.
Another 300 of unorganized.
So,
yeah.
So when you think of that, you know, there was a time that was operative, and then it went where we are currently, yeah. speculative. You know, we're not laying literally bricks.
So yeah.
You can imagine somewhere there had to be a discussion about what should the initiatic process should look like. Okay, we use a lot of phrases, who best can work and best agree. You see throughout our process, and yet we developed where that no, regardless what religion or faith you are, pretty much you can use that Bible on that altar, and yet we still manage mm-hmm. to still be brothers at all times. I think that is the bigger lesson we're being taught, maybe tolerance, maybe, you know, that higher form that we're able, once we walk through that door, that we should be able to.
Which seems to be rather absent in the rest of society right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, that, yeah. that is,
Very
that's,
much so.
Yeah, that, yeah. And that is kind of interesting, because that leads back to some of the questions that I'm presented with of new guys that walk into the lodge, and they listen to us have a discussion like this. And they listen to just the language that they use, or that we use, and they're like, I've been missing this. They are used mm-hmm. to a conforming, superficial environment where everybody better use the same words and everybody better agree, and yet...
If not, you're out.
if not, you're out. And then they come into an organization and to a group like this, and they hear us having the same kind of discussion that, what about religion, what about politics, but now we're having it in a open, free manner that isn't excluding and saying, well, if you believe this, you're out of the group. We're saying that we're going to accept whatever these views and stuff are as your views, but we're not going to bring it out on the floor and force you to change your view. You're not going to force me to change my view, but we're going to recognize that we are all bigger than those views.
I think it's interesting that the procedure of making a Mason is not the same in all of Masonry. Mm-hmm. Each state has its own procedures. Each country has its own procedures. So we're not even locked into a commonality in that sense. We're free to develop our own procedure. All we have to do is believe in the tenets of Freemasonry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a core.
Basic foundation.
Yeah, it's funny how just that little bit of a core basically unites everything so well, you know? Because, like I said, everything's different or whatnot, but you meet a brother halfway across the world or whatnot, and you'll find you could have that same discussion and not.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's even further just like we're talking example now, you know? Of acceptance that, you know, you can come from a different country, a different state, whatever it may be, and you walk into a lodge and they know you already have a, shall I say, a core foundation of your belief system, and they welcome you without question.
Yeah, and it almost goes back to which came first, you know, who taught what first, who became the Mason first. Mm-hmm. And because we all have that common, like you said, we keep bringing, you know, faith, hope, charity, brotherly love, relief, and truth. We have these lessons that we all approach maybe a little bit differently because of the paradigms we come from, mm-hmm. but we have those lessons foremost in our minds, mm-hmm. so that whenever we start to interact with each other, we interact at a different starting point. You know, it's like we start three steps up in the, you know, on the...
But all with the basics of decency to each other.
Our core values.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Our core values.
But I wanted to bring up a topic which was that we discussed a little bit earlier here, which was about the presidents and Masonry. And one of the things I was curious on is that it seems like presidents who were Masons have a much more favorable outlook as far as their reputation and what they did and what they accomplished than presidents that weren't Masons. And now I'm not saying that exists for every president, but at the same time, I would say it seems to be a higher probability that you know if you're a Mason and you're a president that you're going to have history is going to regard you a little more favorably. And I'm wondering if that's because of they're better leaders, or they know how to work with people because of the teachings of Masonry, or you know what do people think?
Well, actually, here's a question, and this may go to your discussion, is are they better leaders, or whenever they stopped being presidents, did they blend back into society and just continue being good men instead of some president that's the only legacy that they have as being president, and they have to work really hard at what's my legacy as president, whereas mm-hmm. a president that was a Freemason doesn't have to go, that's my legacy. My legacy is I'm a Freemason, and my activities as a man afterwards are conducted a little bit differently. I mean, is that almost where you're asking?
Well, I mean, a little bit of that, but I'm actually thinking like more along the line of, I mean, if you think of any presidents that are Masons or whatnot, you don't know too many that are just the people go, oh my God, that he was a horrible president. You know?
Well, I don't know. Gerald Ford.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But wasn't because of his personal
action. That was just a matter
that
of
was,
poor timing.
That was circumstances.
I was waiting for you guys to finish, but the circumstance, history dealt them what they had.
A bad hand entirely.
Yeah, and does that mean that they were bad men? No. You know, they were good men. Certain presidents like Jefferson, like Washington, situationally, they succeeded by their abilities, but was that because they were Freemasons? Did the tenets of Freemasonry teach them that? Or were they inherently good leaders to begin with? And because they were Masons, did that help them advance more successfully?
Yeah, so back to the chicken and the egg thing.
Well, but you look at like Truman, for instance, you know, he was in a very similar situation, you know, you know, came into a war, right. and turned around and dropped two nuclear bombs or whatnot.
Well, yeah. But do you know what's interesting about that?
But still is regarded pretty well. Truman
and MacArthur are both Masons.
Right.
Yeah.
Truman had to fire MacArthur.
Yeah.
And actually what's interesting about, you say, okay, that's like a bleak part of history, but I have had on my radio show, I've had discussions with World War II veterans that were involved in the end game process. Oh, yeah. And I've had one guy who was involved in, prisoner of war type, he was in charge of prisoners of war from the Japanese. And afterwards, this is years after the end and after we dropped Nagasaki and Hiroshima, he had discussions with some of these guys that then went on to become prominent Japanese businessmen, Japanese leaders, and they have said to him that
the better road,
that we actually saved millions of lives by the actions that we took because of the road that they were traveling down with their emperor and what they were doing. They actually recognized that what we did, as horrific as it was, actually saved millions of lives.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah. They estimated if we invaded the islands of Japan, over 1 million casualties, just from our side, not counting their side.
That's what I'm saying, both sides.
Both sides, yeah. So, and then that brings up the interesting fact of even those men who were Masons that were dealt the strange circumstances, I don't remember having any discussions with anybody, even with Gerald Ford or with, some of these other people, that they were bad men. Okay, I may disagree politically with what you did. I may have a discussion of that. But I don't ever remember someone saying, he's just I don't like him as a man. They all seem to have a aura or
It wasn't a dishonesty thing.
Exactly,
Like some presidents have had.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, whatever circumstances they acted within, that they don't have the reputation of,
corrupt or dishonest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's just like anything else. You have somebody in charge who has to make a decision, and normally that decision is going to be opposed by 50% of the people and supported by 50% of the people.
Right.
So,
and it was his conscience that he probably struggled more over it than anyone else.
Probably. Yeah. But he's the one who had to make a decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you look though and you see that, and I say, Ford really wasn't regarded all that great, I would say, but, not as bad. I would say that I think it could have been, but with the timing and everything, but you look at that though, and it seems like, it's hard to really find a president that was a Mason that really has a bad legacy.
Yeah, and I think, all of the discussion we've been having kind of ties into that. Yeah. It's they made a decision, but that decision they moved on from. And as they were not president anymore, they didn't have to build their life on what was my legacy as being president. Mm-hmm. Masonry, I think, gives us a foundation of action and that we can actually move on and still interact within our communities and not have to go out and, try and leverage our time as president or whatever into our legacy. We have the internal legacy of we have an actionable code of conduct that we can then live within and move around.
So in other words, history is very interesting. A train of thought I'm having here. Let's take it back even further if you want to go back further. So there has to be something to its core values, because correct me if I'm wrong on this, let's go even back to the North and the South fight, where the South has helped buried Northern, or a Northern person wasn't Shaw from the South, or vice versa, because he was a Mason. What is it there? There's something there that even with that, the stories that we, in history that we look back at.
With their differences, they were still human beings and they decided to be humane to one another.
To one another.
Regardless of how much bloodshed there was
going on in the war. all those people, just like in any war, most of the people in the war were put into that position. They did not choose that position. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, they had to take a position. But overriding that would be the Masonic values. I may have to do this, but I don't have to take it this far.
And that's what I was saying. If the Masonic value is that great that even a Northern or a Southern would say, I see his brother. I'm not going to shoot him. I'm not going to kill him. In other words, what he did is he stepped or rose above the politics mm-hmm. of that at that particular moment.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know who was telling me this, and I have no facts backing it up or anything like that. It was a story during the Civil War or whatnot, as they're going through raising down a town or whatnot, a widow came out and showed her husband's apron or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they stopped, moved past the house, left her house standing or whatnot, went on to...
Somebody had to make that decision to do that. It wasn't like everybody just decided to do it. Somebody gave the orders... We move on, guys.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. We didn't see this house. Let's keep going. So, it's an interesting, interesting how you see those little tidbits, though, from in history and stuff like that. And again, going back on the presidency thing, I personally think it's, I mean, whether it be they had the tenets before they were Mason, or they were Mason before they became president or whatnot, they have these tenets that promote working with one another and also on top of which leadership, and you see that reflect in their
actually you bring up an interesting point, because I don't think, and I may be wrong, but I don't think that any of the presidents that were Masons became Masons after they were president. Yeah. I believe that they were all Masons first.
Yeah, I agree too. I think that's exactly the case.
In fact, that's
when we elect people to become Masons, we assume that we find that there are good men already, and the idea of Masonry is to hone them even better, mm-hmm. and that each of us attempts to improve ourselves as we go along. And therefore, it's sort of an extra layer of that little conscience on the shoulder, sitting on our shoulder, that is probably more present than it would be had we not joined Masonry and pledged ourselves to those decencies.
And that goes back to talking about the initiatory process, where, and I've always found this fascinating, one of the words that we use in our rituals is inculcate. And that mm-hmm. really goes to what you're speaking to, because, you know, to inculcate literally means to beat into your head.
Yeah.
You know, into inculcare is to just beat with a hammer. And so, you know, it's by doing the rituals and by doing the memorization that's required of us and by doing these initiatory things, it makes you think differently.
Mm-hmm. Gives you a foundation where to start building, you know. Well,
the little angel on the shoulder is there all the time now, not just when you let it be. Yeah.
And maybe that answers the question. We transcend from little thinking to bigger thinking, and that's why politics and religion never enters beyond that door.
Mm-hmm. Very,
because
very
everybody who goes into the lodge room has no agenda.
Mm-hmm. You're not trying to cram something down everyone else's throat.
Trying to work on an agenda.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Masonic Life 360, an open and ongoing discussion of topics from a Mason's personal point of view. This has been brought to you by the Masonic Life Initiative. All content is the copyrighted and exclusive content of the Masonic Life Initiative. It may not be used or rebroadcast without their express permission. For more information, visit division8masons.com.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.